You are tuned into We Are Queer on WERU Community Radio Station 89.9 FM in Blue Hill, Maine. We Are Queer highlights the touching experiences from Maine's diverse LGBTQ+ community. From coming out stories to exploring new chapters, WERQ is a voice to the queer people of Maine, building empathy and understanding in our greater community. I'm your host, Olivia Peruk, and I use she, her pronouns. This week, I'm interviewing Beau Dennis, who is a farmer at Dandy Ram Farm in Monroe. In this episode, we discuss queer awakenings, being queer in rural communities, and creating spaces for queer joy and community.
I am Beau Dennis. My pronouns are he, him, and I'm the farmer here at Dandy Ram Farm in Monroe.
So if you hear any amazing insect background, we're right on the farm. So I'm so excited, Beau, to talk to you today about kind of identity and queerness and farming, but also just to like usually start off, we love to get a little background from people that we talk to, a little bit about their identity, where they came from, and maybe those like first sort of queer awakenings or whatnot, if you had
gosh.
Any.
Okay, you want me to go way back.
yes, baby Beau.
Yeah, baby Beau. Let's see. Okay, so yeah, I would say I came out the first time when I was 12 years old. And I'm 34 now, so that was back in the early 2000s, when what we were seeing in the media, the language that we were using around queerness and like LGBTQ identities was, I'd say, a lot more limited than we are now. I was raised with like a very supportive family, but also a family that didn't really know how to support me in the ways that maybe I needed at the time. So I came out the first time, when I was 12. I'd say I'm trans and I'm a queer man is how I identify now. But at the time, you know, I was socialized female and was coming out kind of like in my sexuality at that age. I came out as trans when I actually learned what that was, which embarrassingly wasn't until I was 21 or 20. And thankfully, things are much different now and folks are accessing the supports that they need and, you know, seeing themselves represented in the media and in their peer groups in a much more expansive way. But it really did take me until I was 21 to realize like that my gender had always been queer as well. And then the third time I came out was when I was actually like 28, 29, and 30, when I was realizing that my sexuality had evolved alongside my gender. That's a little bit about like my queer awakening. It really reflected a trajectory of, I think, different from a lot of queerness that's based in cities. I have always been rural in my adulthood, and I've really found myself in the rural landscape of Maine. And that is when I have like had the time and the space and the introspection to truly claim my identity in a joyful, beautiful way. And, you know, we're farming now in Monroe, which is Penobscot territory. It's quite rural. We're about 2 hours north of Portland and 30 minutes outside of Belfast. So, and I had been previously down east on really small islands and a bigger island of Mount Desert Island as well. And in those rural spaces and farming is truly when I found myself. So it was those moments when I was truly in my body, using my body, creating beautiful things and growing food for community, that I felt this space to be able to understand my identity as it has evolved and as it is now.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for sharing. I know I would say it's not embarrassing at all to come out many different times in your life. That is, I feel, for many people and many queer people, a very constant in the expression and in learning.
Yeah. It sounds exhausting, but in fact, it's like so celebratory to constantly be finding new ways that we can relate to ourselves and relate to community to me is just the joy of living.
That's so beautiful. And something you mentioned about being in your body and farming, I'd love to dig into more. Because I think for some people, like you said, the sort of idea of what it means to be queer in a rural space, I think we don't have as much representation of that. But in Maine, obviously, is a pretty rural state. So I think for a lot of people here, I would love to hear kind of how that transpired.
Yeah, I definitely would say it wasn't always easy. So I started farming in 2008. So I guess this is my 16th year farming. And at the time I was working on farms, I was apprenticing. And then I started my first farm when I was 22, which was a vegetable farm. And looking around me, I didn't see people that looked like me. It was constantly being in spaces, mostly with straight cis couples that were farming together in a romantic relationship and a business partnership that were farming together. And I, you know, had a supportive partner, but I was farming solo. And I constantly kind of had to be speaking up and self-advocating for people to do basic things like use my pronouns. So it wasn't easy. And then I transitioned to managing a farm in central Maine, which provided a much more hostile environment to be out in. So I kind of had to hide myself and make myself quieter. And I didn't truly realize the detriment and exhaustion it was taking to make myself more butch or dress certain ways. I didn't realize that exhaustion, that it was that toll it was taking on me until I was truly out of that situation. So oftentimes farming and my queer identity were held really separately. And there's grief when we try and separate parts of ourselves out. It's not a healthy thing that I think anyone should be doing on a daily basis, because it doesn't allow us to truly be our whole selves and find safety and find joy beyond that. It really is in this survival mode rather than this thriving mode. So when I started Dandy Ram Farm in 2019, the goal was to create a space and a business where, first and foremost, I could be truly myself and unapologetically gay and have that joy be something that is celebrated in the business unapologetically and supportive of other queer and trans people in agriculture. There's a lot of privileges that I hold as a white person, as somebody that has access to financial support from my family to be able to put a down payment on a farm. I have an off-farm job working for MOFCA, the Maine Organic Farmers and Gardeners Association, as well. So I had privilege in certain areas, which allowed me to be a little bit more risky, that I was like, you know what, I'm going to start this business. I'm going to say that I am a queer farmer, that I am a trans farmer, that I'm living rurally and I'm in this space, and to create a business that reflects that holistic, integrated approach to self that I wanted to be living every day. So I think the integration of farming and queerness wasn't always there. And in the last 6 years of this business, it has been so there in a really beautiful way that hopefully we can talk about the community impacts of that, because that's what's the most exciting to see for me, is the change in agriculture that I've seen in the last few years. But as far as being a queer farmer, to return to your question about body, there is something so deeply, I don't even know what the word is, but like fully us in our body when we are using it to create something. And whether that's you're an artist or whether you're growing something with your hand or you're engaged in community organizing, when we see the impacts of our joy and when we see the impacts of our hard work out there, it is a celebration of self in a way. So I think that there's this reclamation of body that happens to me through farming. I think every day queer people and trans people especially, we see so much violence around us and see so much violent rhetoric discussed about my body and the way I treat my body and decisions I do and don't have over my body and the way that healthcare sees me and politicians see me as a trans person is as this like scary monster. And to be farming and designing with flowers, because we are a flower farm, to create something beautiful for our clients and for our farmers market for people to engage in is a reclamation of my body as a queer person, to really take it back and say, this is me, here we are, let's do something beautiful.
Wow. I feel like you should have like a book of poetry or something. Like, you're just like spouting these like amazing lines. I'm like, man, how do I even follow this up? It's great. I do want to, because you mentioned you were just really excited to hear talk about that sort of transformation you've seen in the community. So I'd love to just hear from you about that.
Yeah, sure. I mean, my off-farm job, as I shared, is supporting beginning farmers through MAFCA. Like, it is so delicious. And I'm like, I hope that nobody has the experience that I had when I started farming and working on Maine farms. I was in some really sketchy, unfortunate situations. I've also had incredible mentors along the way as well. So yeah, the farming scene has definitely changed. And here at Dandy Ram, you know, our goal as a flower farm is to provide joy while in just and sustainable relationship with the land and the people engaged in our business. And we're growing flowers, and that financially supports our business, but a real central goal to it is to support other LGBTQ people engaged in agriculture. So some of the ways that we do that is we share land with three other trans and queer beginning farmers that want a space to try out, okay, is farming right for me? And just sharing land and being able to grow along other queer people. We have an incredible, like, queer-identified staff that work wedding installations and also on the farm here. We have a teenage intern who's amazing that works on the farm sometimes as well. And we host events. So that was something that, you know, Dandy Ram started on leased land. And by the end of 2022, we had four different leases to be able to come up with the land access that we needed. And that wasn't sustainable. So we transitioned to this spot where we're in the same town that I was leasing, to be able to have long-term land access and build infrastructure that really could support events. So right now we're in the process of building a barn to be able to host workshops and also have a better design space for us to work in. But we host, I would say, like 1 to 3 larger events for LGBTQ rural people a year. So that's really beautiful to see connections happening in this rural space on the land. Yeah, I think a big thing for me in it is that representation does matter. Yeah. Sometimes I have these moments where I'm like, is representation enough? And I'm like, yo, representation feels so radical sometimes, especially when we don't have queer like elders in our lives, maybe, or we don't have, you know, representation of rural queer people running businesses.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm kind of wondering, like, it seemed like in many ways your trajectory was very much self-made, in the sense of kind of not necessarily finding that space originally there, that like kind of welcoming community, and going off on your own to develop that. And I'm just wondering if you have any advice or suggestions or what you're seeing, like even maybe the reaction from Monroe and in the greater, you know, this area of Maine, more mid-coast Maine to this farm.
Yeah. I think sometimes there's a lot of assumptions about the adversity that we must face as a farm. And I'm so happy to say it's the exact opposite. When we're in rural spaces, regardless of, especially since this is a election year, I'll say this, is that regardless of who you vote for, and regardless of like your political belief systems, we need each other. I need to have somebody till our fields with a tractor because we don't have a tractor. We need somebody to buy wood from to be able to heat our house in the winter. We need a local mechanic. We need these systems that help our farm go. All of the pieces that, you know, running a business are reliant on, whether it's the gravel folks, whether it's the contractors that are working on our barns. And our interactions have been nothing except, you know, kind and human. And I think that that takes some of the fear away for people. If they can see a trans person running a business, employing people, being kind to others, it maybe shifts a belief around how different we are. Like, we have a lot more in common than we have that is separate from one another. So generally, locally, it's been incredible. People support us and they like to see that, you know, this used to be a dairy farm and now it's being farmed again. So they like to see, you know, I think younger folks succeed in agriculture, regardless of that person's identity. That isn't to say that I deal with BS. And I do it with a smile on my face because that's what those survival moments are. You know, accessing healthcare, accessing resources, realizing that 10 minutes after I had a conversation with somebody that there was some intentional, you know, bias that was creeping up in that conversation that maybe impacts the services that I receive. There are definitely moments when I have my boyfriend talk to people instead of me talking to people because the response we will receive is better and the services that we will receive are better. And I wish I didn't accept those things as much as I did, but it's just knowing when is it worth fighting? Like, when is it worth my personal energy to put my safety at risk to be able to access something? And I don't have that energy every day. So it's easier to be kind and assume the best in people than to put up those walls.
You are tuned in to WERU Community Radio Station, and you're listening to We Are Queer. I'm your host, Olivia Peruk, and you're listening to a conversation I'm having with Beau Dennis, a farmer in Monroe, on his experiences with being queer in rural Maine, and how he chooses to navigate interactions with other people.
I have an incredible queer community in Waldo County. Like, shout out to the amazing community that we have been able to build that is full of bonfires and, you know, just gorgeous celebratory moments throughout the season. And I wouldn't find the strength without those, you know, queer specific community spaces. But definitely, as far as our neighbors and rural community goes, be kind and assume the best because it's exhausting to not.
I think that's a really wonderful point. I think, like you mentioned kind of early on, that sometimes we assume that there's so much adversity or the worst. And I think that there is something powerful about just, you know, being kind. And I definitely, and, you know, I it does seem like obviously things aren't always perfect, but overall you've had a really amazing reaction, which I think, you know, hopefully will inspire other to enter a space that isn't maybe on the outward super queer accepting or whatnot. But I think, you know, for a lot of people just getting into those spaces, and you said having those interactions with people can slowly demystify the sort of, you know, if that's the scary trans person or, you know, the gay or lesbian person.
For sure.
So I think that's important.
Yeah, it is important. And what I'll say also, like an asterisk to that, is like, I am able to access certain spaces because of privileges that I hold.
Right.
Where like whiteness affords me a lot of privilege in spaces that would increase my fear for personal safety if I didn't have that. So that's also part of it.
Yeah, absolutely. For sure. Yeah. So I feel like we kind of covered the basis of the farm and whatnot. And I'm wondering, just like in terms of like finding queer community, I think for younger queer people, sometimes like it's not always obvious where to find those communities. So I'm kind of wondering, like, being in a more rural spot, what were ways that you engaged and found other kind of safe queer spaces?
Yeah, for sure. It's, yeah, the internet. Which is weird, but like I often have like shame about how much time I spend on like things like Instagram or Signal, but I'm like, that's how I connect with people. It helps me feel less alone. And I think from those places of feeling less alone and more grounded in our body, which I would say not everyone has that response to being online, but for me, that really does help me feel less alone and get me excited. From that space, I'm usually able to make connections. So there's an incredible Signal thread that's in Waldo County for queer folks that just keeps growing, and resources are shared out on there. Mutual aid requests are shared out on there. Events are shared out on there. And platforms like that have been incredible as far as like knowing that things are happening and I don't have to go to all of them. But and then also collaborating with other organizations like Out in the Open, which is a rural queer organization based in Maine as well as Vermont. So collaborating with them to host summits here at the farm. And just saying, being more engaged in what's happening. As a farmer, I don't have a lot of time, so I am not able to go to as many events as I want to or organizing projects that I want to do. But in the winter, it definitely is great to like tap back into those. So yeah, through Instagram, through Signal, that's like how I've been able to make connections. Yeah, I have a pretty like small, close group of friends that I mostly hang out with, but then we can go to things that are happening. We don't make it down to Portland a lot, and that's been important, is like finding stuff that's happening in the Midcoast area and Central Maine area for us to attend.
Yeah, well, that's great. I think, like you said, the sort of like shame, but like I think for young people, the internet, especially I think in my generation, which is like the internet has been a powerful tool, I think, especially for areas where people haven't been able to be exposed to different ideas. I know for myself, like I definitely wouldn't have known, like I don't even know how I sourced. I was like, oh, that's what I am.
Yeah. It goes back to like a key thing that I hold a lot, is that like representation matters. Like seeing ourselves in media content and on the internet, on different platforms, is crucial for helping us, like, one, feeling like we belong, and two, helping us to discover different parts of ourselves. And that is a leading thing that I hope to do with Dandy Rim, is just say like, hey, we're here, we're really gay, and we're growing flowers. This is a dahlia.
I love that. So,
I think the self-expression that can happen when we are in a space where we do feel safe and we do feel celebrated and our like basic needs are being met around housing security, access to healthcare, access to food, and access to community as a basis of that as well. The exploration that can come from that is so exciting for me. So I started this farm. It's a lot of work, but I'm at the phase with the business that, you know, we're doing around 25 wedding designs a year. We go to a farmer's market. We also ship nationally in the fall. And I'm so excited about integrating more of my experience as an artist into that. You know, I've been able to create this space where personally I feel like I can be my full self in our culture now, and took a long road for me to get there. And I'm really excited to figure out how to integrate my perspective as an artist into this business now as well. So a growing area of Dandy Rim is, how do we use floral design as an expression for social change? And how do we use floral design as a reflection tool of the rural queer experience? And right now I'm working on a floral design, floral fashion project called Let Every Pansy Bloom, which is photographing other queer and trans folks in floral installations and floral fashion and having conversations with them about their experience, mostly as rural trans people, and photographing them with flowers. So that's been a joy of this year that I've been kind of sneaking in between our wedding work. And kind of the next project on the horizon for Dandy Rim for floral design that I'm excited about is to explore more about the impacts of the HIV and AIDS epidemic in rural Maine through floral installation as the medium to explore that. That's definitely something that, as I get older and as a queer man, I see missing around me, is like really a robust mentor group of elders. And it feels kind of like a ghost in my generation, at least, about, you know, the impact of HIV and AIDS, and wanting to learn more about that and wanting to explore it more with flowers as an artistic medium. So I'm excited about the future of integrating more of art practice into DandyRam, which is certainly there with floral installation and floral design, but really to allow some of my, like, political doesn't seem like the right word for it, but definitely like social change perspectives to come through with florals. So that's an exciting project, maybe for 2025. Seeking grant funding, I'll just plug that. But yeah, it's I'm really excited about that.
That sounds wonderful. Well, I think I got almost everything I need. So
I think
If you're all
One thing I wanted to say.
Yes, go
that,
for it.
this is back on the subject of like how queerness and farming interact. Mm-hmm. For me, queerness is a political identity as well as like a personal identity, mm-hmm. Which I understand and respect that not everybody holds that perspective in it. But for me, it really does have some sort of, you know, political social justice connotation with the word queer. For me, what that looks like in DandyRam is prioritizing other things over capitalism. Capitalism often exploits our body and can be a violent experience. And it's as starting a business and running a business, I'm directly integrated into that experience of capitalism. But my hope is to create a space that prioritizes community and our health and safety as people working on this farm and designing with flowers over that profit. So yes, we are running a business, but it is really about like, how can we use this space for community? How can we use it for connection and joy to create a space of belonging? And for me, that's like kind of what queerness looks like in the business planning part of it, which I think is separate from other farms sometimes. It's just that our goals maybe and our prioritizations are a little different.
And yeah, that's
it.
That's it. All right. Sounds good.
Thank you. You should follow us on Instagram at, I think it's DandyRam Farm. And you can find us on the web at dandyramfarm.com. We are booking weddings for 2025.
There you go.
That's my plug.
Love it. Yeah. All right. Well, thanks so much.
Yeah, of course.
Thank you to today's guest, Bo Dennis, who reminded us the importance of building safe queer spaces and following your joy. Thank you also to Juniper Ginger, a local artist in Maine who created our theme music. And that is all for We Are Queer. My name is Olivia Peruk, and we'll be back next month. We Are Queer happens every second Thursday of the month at 4:30 p.m. and can later be streamed on the web or app. If you have feedback for the show or want to get in touch, email info@weru.org with WERQ in the subject line. Thank you for being with us, and remember to stay curious and kind. Stay tuned for more public affairs broadcasting.